This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PlayStation Pop Experience. I'm talking to you because, you know, you're looking right at me right now, and I'm not supposed to. I'm going to break the fourth wall, which happens to be the name of the latest episode of WandaVision. How you doing all? I am Andy Atherton, one of your co-hosts here on Pop Goes to the Couch. And that's right, we are talking about WandaVision Episode 7, Breaking the Fourth Wall, which is a reference to a lot of the aughty sitcoms like Modern Family, Parks and Rec, and The Office. But we're going to break it down for you about everything else that happened in this episode. This was a kind of a lot of stuff happened, a lot of payoff, a lot of twists, a lot of turns, and a lot of questions as we go into the final two episodes. Let's get the crew in here, though. First off, Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean, how are you doing?
Good morning. Good evening, Andy. How are you tonight?
Hey, if people could be listening to this in the morning, at night. It doesn't matter. You're not wrong, Sean. Yet on this episode.
Well, I probably will be at some point tonight because it's always me. It's me all along. So I'm sure.
Gotta stay on brand, Sean. Gotta stay on brand. All right. Also, Scott Shiflett's here. Hey, Scott.
Andy, a pleasure to be on. Can't wait to talk about this latest episode with these fine gentlemen.
All right. Also, speaking of fine gentlemen, Tim Capel's rounding out our crew.
Good morning, because time has no meaning. Who cares? Much like the Hex, this is just, reflective of life. So morning, evening, night, afternoon, lunch, dinner, it's all the same.
All right. Well, it is, actually. What month is it? What day is it? What year is it? We don't know. We don't know what time it's
impossible to say.
Impossible question the answer, as we like to say around here. All right. So this latest episode, though, was quite a fun one for some people, so to speak. But there was a lot happening. So let's get off with our review here. All right, so we start off outside the Hex field. Monica Rambeau and Agent Jimmy Woo, they continue driving around to meet Monica's contact. Woo tells her that Darcy did get past the last bit of firewall at Sword HQ, discovering R&D reports on a secret project called Cataract. He says that Hayward wasn't decommissioning Vision. He was trying to bring him back online. But nothing had worked until Wanda stole Vision's body. Hayward has been tracking Vision because he wants his sentient weapon back, and Jimmy points out that someone needs to tell Wanda what's going on. Then we cut to Wanda, who wakes up realizing Vision isn't next to her. The show cuts to her talking directly to the camera as if she's being interviewed. Look, we've all been there, right? Letting our fear and anger get the best of us, intentionally expanding the borders of the false world we created. And then we get a flashback to the Sword soldiers running away from the expanding Hex and getting trapped in there. So that's how our episode starts. Sean, what do you think of this? Now, this is just a snippet because there's a little bit more before the open, but let's just kind of like set the picture of, you know, what you think Operation Cataract could be. And, you know, we've moved forward to the 2000s. I think, in my opinion, I think this is the last sitcom-y episode we're going to get.
So. I would think so, I guess. I mean, we're obviously a Modern Family era, I guess, is what we're doing, because it's very similar. I think Cataract, I think Tim's brought it up a couple times, or we speculated that, he wants Vision, they want him as a weapon, right? And I think that's really why they want to bring him back, and I think it's pretty apparent at this point what they want to do with Vision. So I really think Operation Cataract's really no more than that. I mean, I could be wrong, unless Tim or Scott have other thoughts. Wanda waking up. I love Hot Mess Wanda. So every version of Wanda we've been getting, this one might be my favorite because here she's totally broken down. She needs a day to herself. She's just a big mess. And she's lying in her bed in her Halloween outfit still, which is kind of hotchy, right? So, So pretty good opening, and it kind of sets the tone of, you know, she's not in a really good place, but they spin it comically a little bit. But, you know, this episode is going to be a little off the wall because she is not in a good place whatsoever to open this show right now.
Okay. Scott, what do you think of them kind of just setting the groundwork before we get to the boys?
I like that. And with the Cataract thing, it's definitely that they're going to turn – I'm not sure if they're going to sounds like a weapon. I don't know if it's like a bomb or something, or so they can fight other people. It is concerning, though, that that's all they want, and that's why they didn't really want to help Vision last episode. And Wanda seems to know that she's made a mistake, and she's just like, I just want a day in bed to recharge before I go out and fight the day. So it's nice, and, you know, it felt kind of quirky, like the first couple of seasons of Modern Family. So that was nice to see, and I agree with agree with the sentiment that it was that this is the last time we're going to see like the decades episodes or something.
All right. Tim, what do you think?
As far as Project Cataract and Vision, I think Scott summed it up pretty well. I had theorized in a previous episode of this podcast that maybe S.W.O.R.D. was trying to repair Vision in some way, that they had a benevolent motive. Well, I don't believe that so much at this point, given they had a very clear opportunity to get a fully intact Vision back and failed to do so. In our last episode of WandaVision, Darcy screaming, help him, as he makes his way out of the hex, and they make no move to do so. So clearly they do not want a fully functioning Vision as we remember him. They want him as probably a weapon. I mean, you think cataract, what's a cataract? And in the context of Vision, it blurs your vision, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not exactly the same thing that we would be seeing before with this character. They were going to change him in some way, obscure the character as we knew him. So that's kind of my thoughts on the whole Project Cataract and what that means and what their plans were with Vision. Plus, we've already seen that S.W.O.R.D. are kind of dickheads, right? Which, much to the chagrin of myself and Sean, like that they went down that road, but these guys suck. Wanda waking up in bed being a hot mess. It's funny, like we're now getting an homage to a show that is still on the air, and how sort of charming it was at first when that show premiered to see this type of presentation. And now all I can think is, God, I hate shows like this. Like, it's just how annoying the whole whiny, bitchy, over.
I liked it for like two seasons, and then yeah, I quit watching. Right? Yeah,
it had its appeal for like two or three seasons. Now you just see it and go, God, these stupid fucking parents who bitch about everything, complain. It's to this fake mockumentary. Like, what is the reason for it? Who are they talking to? And we're going to see how this episode actually plays with that in some pretty fun, clever ways. But it just reminded me how annoying I find this style of sitcom now. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably deliberate.
Yeah. I checked out on Modern Family probably 5 or 6 years in, and I just binged The Office. I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, but I did it more to keep up with the conversation because I know so many people that have watched them, so I wanted to get the jokes. Parks and Rec, I think, was the best use, though, out of any of them. So, Tim, you were correct. A cataract is a blurred Vision. I think, you know, Vision, as we all know, and I'm sure all the characters know, because Darcy, as we'll get to later in the episode, Darcy seems to know an awful lot about events that she wasn't present for. I don't know if there was a debriefing, if there was an email chain, I don't know. But so what we know, though, is Vision is worthy to pick up Mjolnir. So he can't be used as, like, a weapon for whatever nefarious means, if that's really what S.W.O.R.D. is up to, or this section of S.W.O.R.D. So I think that could be what
Cataract. Well, Tim's got me. Again, Tim made a lot of sense. If they wanted them, they would have took him. So that makes me rethink what I was saying. So... There's definitely
they don't a want consciousness.
Yeah, so now you got me thinking about that. So good call there.
They just want to RoboCop him.
They want the parts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if they want to RoboCop him, they're going to ruin the show. But
speaking of RoboCop, tune into the next episode of Blockbuster Rewind here on the Pipe Nation Pop Experience.
There's the setup.
I said RoboCop him, not RoboCop 3 him.
Yes. So more of that witty banter you can expect. All right, so continuing on with the show, Billy and Tommy run into the bedroom telling Wanda that their video game is freaking out. The controllers keep shifting errors. I love this scene, by the way, because I have had...
You and me both.
I know, but how they morph into the end into Uno cards, that's kind of like a biggest letdown. Wanda hides under the covers and says that she's just resting her eyes. Billy tells her his head feels really noisy. He doesn't like it. Wanda just wants to stay quiet in bed. She tells the interview she's planning on taking a quarantine-style staycation as a punishment for her reckless evening. A whole day to herself, as the guys have alluded to. She pulls the covers down, realizes she's still wearing her Scarlet Witch outfit from Halloween. She then goes downstairs and grabs some almond milk from the fridge. When she turns back after grabbing some cereal, it glitches into a carton of dairy milk. Then the carton changes into a bottle. Wanda tells the interviewer she's not sure about what that's all about. Sorry. It's probably just a case of the Mondays. Am I right? She says. And then the opening credits show Wanda's name written in a variety of formats before revealing WandaVision, created by Wanda Maximoff, title card. And then we get to right after the open, which is where we'll pause, at the S.W.O.R.D. base outside Hex. An agent tells Hayward that the WandaVision signal has disappeared and it's now just dead air. He tells her they launched today. She acknowledges and walks away. So, Scott, what did you think of, you know, Billy and Tommy kind of experiencing this morphing thing? Wanda, you know, coming downstairs and her milk changing on her, and we get the opening credits, which was very, I guess, Office or Parks and Rec X. I don't know. I don't want to get stuck on that. And then we get, you know, Hayward, the fact that we now have learned that WandaVision is off the air.
Well, WandaVision being off the air is because they screwed up and that they lost their own connection. So I don't feel bad for S.W.O.R.D. at all. They ruined it for everyone. But I did like the stuff changing. It shows, like the milk going through different decades and like the video game consoles, you know, starting with like a DS, them holding a DS, and then they actually get analog there with their playing cards. But it also shows that, Wanda's not in control anymore since she can't really figure out what's going on and doesn't really seem to care. And I did really enjoy with the Billy saying there's voices in his head all the time. That means Wanda was having to deal with those voices in her head, and she was just like pushing them away. But with so many more people added, I think we're going to get to a part where this might combust in later episodes, and that's going to be interesting to see what happens.
All right. Tim?
Yeah, I would back that up. It's maybe a case of... And the way that she expanded that hex, maybe Wanda has now stretched herself too thin, where already we were seeing a lot of cracks in the facade of this hex, and now she's taken on even more. So is this a byproduct of the fact that maybe she's pushed her powers too far? Is this reflective of her deteriorating mental state, or maybe something else is at foot? Maybe it's not so much Wanda losing control, but someone else directing, manipulating events and causing all these little glitches. Maybe that is happening on purpose to rattle her, which maybe there are some suggestions of that as we move throughout the episode. I like Scott's point also about Billy struggling with the voices in his head, and the implication is very much that his powers are, you know, he takes after his mother, Wanda, in much the same way that Tommy takes after Quicksilver, his uncle. So if he's got these voices in his head, he doesn't know how to deal with that. He doesn't know how to control it. He's just a child, but Wanda does. She does have the experience as the adult and as, you know, just been shoving it aside, which can't be a healthy coping mechanism. As far as the theme song, it's weird how it was more like it sounded like The Office, right? Mm-hmm. And we're doing Modern Family as the send up, but I don't know. I guess the Office is a catchier tune. They're both shows that were around at the same time and did that similar new sitcom conceit of breaking the fourth wall. So, I guess it's fair game. It's just weird that they would throw it back to The Office when that was just, you know, not a family sitcom in any sense. I mean, other than the symbolic sense, but, you know, this felt very much we're doing Modern Family, so who cares about The Office? But I don't know. It is what it is.
All right, Sean?
Yeah, I won't say much more about the opening credits. For me, it was probably one of the – I mean, it didn't really – do anything for me. Yeah, it's mostly The Office, but this opening really didn't do much for me as far as the credits, much compared to the other ones that I thought were maybe a little bit more creative and a little bit better. Yeah, Billy's interesting, right? So you hear the voices in his head. So some Randy Orton comparisons there. So that was, you said that multiple times. But he hears voices in his head. And yeah, I think this kind of, like to Tim's point, that's a really good point that, you know, similar powers to his mom. So I really did enjoy the whole shifting with the controllers. And the Uno one really popped me because they even went back prior, like when there was no video games, you have to play Uno. So I thought that was really a neat little touch there. Yeah, hot mess, Wanda needing her day off and in her Scarlet Witch outfit. So yeah, I love that. I love that. The milk also changing back and forth. So clearly she's losing control. I also like Tim's part, point around maybe it's someone else losing control, not necessarily Wanda, because someone else is pulling the strings, and maybe this is all part of what the master plan is with Wanda, is for her to start losing her mind and losing her powers. And I also like the point that Tim also made about probably stretching herself out too much. And that's what's happening here, is this is a direct reflection of her stretching the hex out way too far. And she can't really, her powers can't really stretch as far as that went. So all valid good points that you guys all made. And I really had nothing new to add. So good job, guys.
All right, cool. All right. So continuing on. So the ends, and we wake. Actually, it's right after we leave the Sword makeshift facility. Vision wakes up in the circus. One of the performers confuses him for a clown, tells him he's late for a rehearsal with the escape artist, who just happens to be Darcy. She tells the unseen interviewer that her new gig doesn't really speak to my skill set. Vision recognizes Darcy from outside of the hex, and he says they locked eyes, that there was an understanding. She doesn't remember him, though, and walks off. Tells him, you know, that she'll go out with him and order the lobster. That's a shout out to my girlfriend, Ellen, because that sounds just like her. And then Wanda asks the kids if they've seen Vision. They say they haven't and offer to go look for him. Well, he doesn't want to be here and there's nothing I can do about that, she replies. Billy asks her about when Pietro mentioned re-killing Dad on Halloween. She tells Billy not to believe anything that man says. He is not your uncle. They ask who he is, and she admits that she doesn't have all the answers. In fact, I have no answers. I'm starting to believe that everything is meaningless. You're welcome to draw your own conclusions, but that's where I'm at. Wanda admits to the camera that she may have gone a bit dark, but for reasons that their kids may have inherited tough skin from their vibranium dad. Agnes then arrives at the door and offers to take the boys to give Wanda some space. Wanda settles down to watch TV, but the TV and furniture start glitching and transforming into earlier models from previous episodes. Wanda then uses her powers to change everything back. She assures the interviewer that she's fine. She's fine. So, Tim, what do you think of, you know, we get Vision, you know, waking up in back inside the hex. Darcy has been, you know, under the hex, and then Vision pulls her out of it. And, you know, she basically, we have a buddy cop situation going here with those two. Mm-hmm. And you know, Wanda goes kind of dark, and it's kind of like, you know, not the best mom here for a minute.
Yeah, not the best mom, but also still in keeping with those annoying, stupid Modern Family sitcom parents that just bitch about and their kids nonstop, and it's just wears thin after about 10 years. But I don't know. And that's why I would agree that this has got to be the last sitcom tribute, just because it's a show that's still on the air. And I was also reminded of a point, like Sean mentioned that the theme song didn't really hit as much in this. And I guess I was kind of talking around that, too. Didn't really hit this episode like it has in previous installments of WandaVision. And that's maybe itself a commentary on how shows today don't really. I mean, yes, they're catchy little jingles, but they're kind of just quick to the point. Not all that memorable, right? Like nobody's putting probably the Modern Family theme or maybe the Office theme in the conversation of like best opening themes of American sitcoms in that conversation, right? So it's true to form. But Wanda being, yeah, a little bit, I don't know, she's almost too passive in ways that are very suspect, because the whole point of what she did, how she's gotten to this state, was she knew that Vision was in danger, and in danger of specifically leaving the hex. Now, whether she knows or not how far along he got, the entire purpose of expanding it was to get him back in and get him back on board, presumably. So it's very odd that she takes no action here to try to pursue him, to find him, to get him back into the household and into the, you know, quiet suburban family that she has constructed. She's very, like, detached in ways that we haven't seen from her to date. Which still makes me wonder if there is more afoot here than just her mental state sliding into that depression, maybe. But yeah, it's fun seeing Vision take up with Darcy, and I mean the rest of the sword guys who got sucked in. We see that they have been converted, apropos, into clowns. So we've got this rather random carnival setting, which I don't know. I kind of got a kick out of that. Darcy looking very interesting. Well, Sean would use a different word. But just fun stuff there between the two of them. And Vision did not get reset, right? He's still you know, quite independent, quite autonomous, thinking for himself. He didn't just snap back into the husband role that Wanda devised for him, as I sort of surmised would happen when she expanded that hex. That is not what happened. We sort of pressed the soft reset, not the hard reset button.
So you did there with the snap reference. Very good. All right, Sean, what's your take on this part of the episode?
So Darcy, I realize why I like Darcy so much, and I think I told you guys in the group chat that once I looked at Darcy in her outfit, and my wife wears, like, you know, she'll go walking and she does her little sweatpants and all that when she walks. So when I saw Darcy in her outfit and how well she filled out that outfit, it totally reminded me of my wife and the glasses. And I took a snapshot and realized that my wife looks indeed a lot like Darcy. And at the same time, also has the same snarky attitude towards me, which I guess I've realized now I kind of like that snarky kind of thing towards me, because I kind of have a theme with that, I guess. So yeah, so Darcy, I love the outfit. I absolutely love.
I like that you turned your perversion to something downright wholesome, where it's like, oh, she's not this hot chick that thirsting. It's like, no, she reminds me of my wife.
I had a realization. Now the other ones are thirst traps. This one's reminding me of my wife. The other ones are clear thirst traps. But so anyway, So I like this, and I like her attitude. This doesn't really speak to my skill set. I love the connection between her and Vision. So I thought that was – Vision said he felt a connection with her, so I guess he literally saw her there struggling, saying, hey, someone go help him. And so it was kind of cool, and I'm all in on this team up. I think this will be kind of cool as we see how this plays out. You know, Wanda being indifferent was a little weird, right? So to Tim's point, she supposedly extended this hex to keep Vision in it. And now she's really indifferent to him. And I also thought it was interesting that she said, this is the first time we've heard her say, this man is not your uncle. And I think that was pretty key. So obviously, like we've talked about, she clearly doesn't recognize this Pietro as her uncle, but is clearly going along with it. It remains to be seen if this is some version of Pietro. I have some thoughts on that later. But yeah, so I thought that was interesting. And really indifferent to the kids kind of too, and being kind of, you know, snooty with them and not really wanting to engage with them too much about things. You know, I can't control it. He's your dad. I have no answers. I don't start to believe that everything is meaningless. So she's starting to lose hope maybe a little bit here, which might be a theme that plays out. She's been hopeless and sad and depressed, and this kind of comes out here. You know, Agnes, of course, always there when you need her to give Wanda some space. And again, you see more of these glitches when she sits down and watches TV and everything starts glitching between timelines and things from the house that look different in the different decades. And she finally uses her power to change everything back. So really an interesting set of things that happened during the course of this time frame.
She's also a little lazy when she just, you know, does a flick of the wrist, opens the door for Agnes. You know, she's like, I'd get the door, but I didn't want to get up.
She's like me trying to get out of a recliner. I have no time for that. So. Yeah,
that's you know, I wish you could just sit there and hit a button and open the door. I don't have that kind of money. Scott, what do you think?
So I'm gonna start off with Wanda, and it seems, I know we've talked about this in previous episodes, but with Tim mentioning, like, it seems like she's depressed, she's starting to believe that everything is meaningless, she doesn't really care where Vision is. I think she's in the fourth stage of grief, which is depression. Like we've seen like the other stages with her. If you think about it with like the denial, denying that he's dead, she brings him back, the anger of like, you know, the first episode where she almost let that guy die of choking. You can see bargaining as well with this whole hex to bring him back. But now she's like with depression after all this work that she's done. Vision doesn't seem to care and wants to get out of the hex. So she doesn't care and she thinks everything is meaningless. So I think, you know, in the next two episodes, we might see acceptance that he's gone. And, you know, she's been like the quasi, like, quote unquote, villain in this because, like, she's keeping, unbeknownst to us, we think she's keeping everyone there, but it may be someone else that's keeping everyone there. And we'll get to that shortly. But that's where I think she's at right now. Like with Tim saying, like, she seems like she's depressed. That, like, really triggered it for me to, like, sit there and think about it. And I was thinking about it as Tim and Sean were talking. And I like the dynamic of Vision and Darcy meeting up and like being like basically like teammates now as they're trying to figure out what the hell's going on with this. And Agnes magically shows up. So it's interesting to see what happens with that.
I see what you did there where she magically showed up. Everybody is on point tonight. I'm telling you. All right, cool.
Feeling so, ourselves, huh?
Yeah, we are. You're killing me, too. Okay, on the edge of the hex field, they meet Monica's contact, Major Goodner. Monica tells her that her mother would have appreciated her loyalty. She's not the only one we're very loyal to, Captain. Goodner shows Rambo and Wu the incursion vehicle they've constructed. We go back to the circus. Vision continues to follow Darcy to persuade her that she was part of a team monitoring a supernatural anomaly. She thinks he's asking her out for a date, so I guess I got a little mixed up there. She reluctantly agrees, and after a weak piece of distraction involving a Mimars, Vision touches Darcy's head to restore her real memories. Part of me secretly wanting a guest spot on the show, but seriously, that sucked. She remarks. <That's so great. laughs> Yeah. She tells Vision that she has answers, but first they have to run away from the circus. With Darcy due to go on stage, they steal a van. Actually, they steal the food truck, which is a, I forgot.
Funnel cake.
Funnel of Love, I think it's called. Great. I would definitely go to a funnel cake truck. If,
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's on my list. Just like going to the Biggie or something. They steal a van, hit the road. Vision asks if his children are safe and about the identity of the imposter Pietro. She can't help him with that. In the house, the glitching is increasing. Even the stork comes back. Wanda admits that she doesn't understand why everything's falling apart, why I can't fix it. So do you think this is maybe what you deserve as the unseen interviewer? All right, so Sean, what do you think of where'd we lead off this one?
On the edge of the hex field with
Sean, all right, Sean, go ahead.
All right, so there's a few things in this episode that I take somewhat issue with. This would be the first one. So last episode, we were all wondering who her aerospace contact was going to be, and we had this big debate about Reed Richards and how we hoped it. I hoped it wasn't Reed Richards, and I said it wasn't going to be Reed Richards. Well, I don't know who the hell this Major Goodner is. They're not. There's no contact. There's no Marvel history with this character, and it just seemed like a kind of a big like fart in church moment for me. Probably one of the first times I've ever felt like that on this show. So kind of a big letdown here, and then I don't know. There might be something to the wording. She's not the only one we're loyal to, Captain. So has anyone responded to Monica as Captain in this show before?
I can't. Well, Jimmy's called her Captain.
All right, so they have called her Captain. All right, but okay. She's not the only one we're loyal to. So who else are they loyal to? I guess it would be maybe her mom. I don't know.
No. I if I can interject, I think that they're loyal to her and not. Not, I guess, Hayward. And like,
oh, okay, I misunderstood that reference.
I don't know. Maybe that was my interpretation.
No, that's probably what it is. I probably misunderstood.
I'll tell you in a minute. I'm rewatching the scene now.
All right, good. Please go ahead. Clarify that. But anyway, the incursion vehicle, okay, it's there. Sure, I have another issue with that later on, which I'll talk about. The circus stuff, we visited Darcy. I loved it. I love her saying part of me wanted to be a guest spot on the show, but that seriously sucked. I also like that she thought he was asking him out on a date. So Darcy is pure gold in this whole scene. and again, we talked about the funnel truck, which I loved. And Darcy really doesn't know who the imposter Pietro is. And the house continues to glitch. And the interviewer off stage is interesting. I'm curious. I mean, I know at the end we see who's kind of behind there. But do you think maybe this is what you deserve? So it continued to just mess with Wanda mentally, and she's falling apart, and it just kind of seems to be poking the bear with her continuously. So really a lot of fun stuff in these last few scenes.
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, we were all upset with the Major Goodner reveal. But also, I think, like, because we're such big fans, we might have been, like, overhyping it too much, and it didn't help that all these clickbait sites were like, oh, we're pretty sure it's Reed Richards, like 10 signs, you know, that Reed Richards is your favorite or whatnot bullshit they were spewing. But, you know, that did seem like a little bit of a letdown, but it's nice to see that all of S.W.O.R.D. isn't bad, you know, because before, I mean, but it's sort of just like a rehashing of S.H.I.E.L.D. where we saw in Winter Soldier. So that wasn't that cool, but, you know, at the circus, it was nice to see Vision and Darcy get some more screen time. And we see, like, I was hoping they wouldn't go the whole episode with Darcy just being in her quote-unquote character. So I'm glad they were able to fix that. And then, you know, the director asking her, this is what Wanda deserves. I loved Wanda's face when she was like, you're not supposed to talk to me. So it's interesting to see. It's like, oh, who is this magical director that we'll see is pursuing these you know, being the puppet master.
All right, Tim.
Okay. I've rewatched the scene. And so when Monica meets Goodner, she says, thank you so much for coming. My mother would appreciate your loyalty. Okay. And Goodner responds to her, she's not the only one we're loyal to, Captain, as if to say,
we're loyal to you.
Yeah, we're also loyal to you.
Okay.
Now, all that said, this, I won't call this an outright bait and switch, because they never did promise us within the show that this aerospace engineer was anyone of note, right? They just sort of strung us along is what it was, because I just sort of try to step back and put myself in the mindset of a quote-unquote normal person watching this series who isn't as detail-obsessed as we are. And all they hear is, oh, well, okay, Monica and the gang are going to meet up with some contact of hers outside of, you know, the bad guys in S.W.O.R.D., and that's just going to be somebody who is, you know, an ally that we can trust. They're not thinking it's going to be some kind of big Marvel character reveal, or if it is, maybe not somebody they're going to recognize. And, I mean, maybe that's all it was. Now, that said, they know goddamn well that people like us are also a big part of the audience for this show and a big part of the conversation when it comes to this show. So they didn't have to do this, right? They could have just said, as of like last episode, Monica and Jimmy making a run for it, her telling him, come on, I've got a contact who we can trust outside the organization. She's agreed to rendezvous. Like that could have been it. And we would
have
been,
why do you have to say aerospace? Because of course that's going
to, why do you have to say aerospace engineer? Why do you have to mention it like at least two other times across two previous episodes? Like there wasn't an outright build up, but they sure made it seem like they were leading us down a path, didn't they? And so all that said, I am still not completely convinced that we aren't going to get a reveal. I don't know that this Agent Goodner is exactly that aerospace engineer that Monica was referring to.
Yeah, because they never refer to aerospace. They don't really refer anything to it whatsoever.
No, it's just they never do. Yes. And she's she is essentially, yes, she's someone who Monica is familiar with, has a history with, and delivers you know, what's supposed to be a somewhat important device that we're going to see in action here in the next few minutes. But we never say that this is who that, you know, super secret astronaut scientist was, right? So I don't know. maybe they're going to double swerve us at the end of the day. I mean, I'm kind of not getting my hopes up either way at this point, but yeah, you can't look at this as anything but a letdown given at least the mild build that they gave it. I don't think it's a total, you know, betrayal of our trust or anything. Like, they had enough goodwill that they could do it and just like use it as a red herring, and it's like whatever. It doesn't like ruin the show or anything, but it is one of those, like, I don't know, kind of felt like you're fucking with us there. So,
and she wasn't very scientist either. Like, she was more military than scientist like, so you might be onto something there, Tim.
Right. I mean, she's dressed in fatigues. Yeah. I mean, not to say a scientist has to wear a lab coat in the middle of the forest, but I don't know. This person doesn't necessarily have to be the aforementioned aerospace engineer. She might just be somebody affiliated with that person who is delivering the goods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not all heroes wear capes, and not all scientists wear lab coats.
Right. And I'm sorry, and I'll just add that, Darcy and Vision is a fun buddy cop duo. Darcy, this is a great reclamation project for the character of Darcy, mm-hmm. who was not well received, shall we say, in previous films. Don't think it was the character's fault, really. Don't even think it wasn't the performer's fault by any stretch. But Thor 2 doesn't have the best reputation in, you know, the grand scheme of MCU films. Thor 1 was just like, she was just kind of there. But
she
here,
got stuck with doo-doo shit, Natalie Portman, as the person she had to play off. So I don't think
kind of did her no favors. Yeah. But here she gets to really shine, just come into her own. And we see her as a character and as somebody who's really likable. But yeah, the interview segment with Vision, where he is then questioned by the interviewer. I want to say that there's a kind of mic drop moment in every episode, at least once in every episode of this series to date. And that was the mic drop moment to me, where I just went, oh shit, that's not supposed to happen. And, to happen kind of, you know, midway through, it's not at the very end. It's not a big reveal or anything. It's just one of those that isn't supposed to happen in this type of show. So I was sort of shook after that, but got me back in after I kind of had to recollect myself after the non-reveal of the whoever this Agent Goodner is.
Yeah. You know, I think also it also speaks to Darcy is probably more mature. She's a doctor now. She was kind of like the goofy sidekick comic relief in the two Thor movies she appeared in. So that's what I think. And I think, you know, it's also had Kat Dennings has more to do. So I think the character's really coming to her own. All right, so time for a commercial break. And a woman is sitting alone on a park bench. Feeling depressed, asks the voiceover, like the world goes on without you. Do you just want to be left alone? Ask your doctor about Nexus. Apparently, it's a unique antidepressant drug that works to anchor you back to your reality or the reality of your choice. You should not take Nexus unless your doctor has cleared you to move on with your life. Nexus, because the world doesn't revolve around you. Or does it? So we go to Agnes's house. Billy tells her that she likes it there. Agnes asks if that's because her rabbit, Senor Scratchy, is such a good listener. But Billy says it's actually because it's quiet. You're quiet, Agnes, he explains on the inside. Tommy asks Agnes if she thinks their mom is okay. Agnes says they don't have to worry. Wanda can do anything. She's super mom. Agnes admits to the camera that she has a tendency to sugarcoat things. So, Scott, what do you think of the commercial break? And, you know, I'm sure Tim will explain how it kind of throws one theory out the window. And what do you think of this little moment with Agnes and the boys?
Well, I was waiting for Wade Barrett to show up with the commercial break.
But, afraid I've got some bad news.
But the antidepressant thing, you know, we at first thought it was with the Infinity Stones, but now I think it has to do with like Wanda's life, because they're like, if you don't like the reality you're in, you can take this and change it. That sounds pretty close to what we've been watching for the past 7 weeks. So that was a little bit on the nose, and you know, you can make reality whatever you want, and that's definitely what Wanda's done. And I did like, you know, we get our first little hint that Agnes maybe isn't who she says she is, with Billy saying that she's quiet on the inside, which would freak me out if some little 9-year-old brat said, "Hey, you're quiet on the inside." I'm like, what the fuck's that supposed to mean? But I did like Agnes then, like, you know, because she's still the comic relief saying, "How are you supposed to tell your son that his mother is nuts?" Because I thought that was pretty funny. But we're definitely leading to something here with Agnes.
Yeah, and I've also, you know, things, you know, you read, you see, you hear after these come out, that the Nexus is something that's in the comics, so I'm sure Tim and Sean can elaborate for us. So, Tim, what do you think of the commercial break and the little scene here with Agnes and the boys?
Okay, so I laid out on our last episode how perhaps the commercials are analogous to the Infinity Stones, which was not an original theory of mine, just something I read out there in the wider community, how each of them line up in some way to one of the abstract aspects of the Infinity Stones. And the one that was sort of left on the table still, maybe two, depending on your interpretation, would be the Power Stone, or maybe the Soul Stone. But I kind of thought we covered that in our last episode. And that's, in fact, that was what clinched it for me. But now I'm kind of throwing that out, because this one was all about reality, right? And just, you know, how the whole show has been about Wanda's subjective reality, very much so, and how she changes it to suit her whims. And we already sort of covered that ground in the Lagos commercial, the paper towel commercial. And when you think about it, like, all of these have been reflective of reality to some extent. And that sort of seems to be what it boils down to, that it doesn't really have anything to do with the Infinity Stones per se. But now we're sort of back to how these are just different aspects of Wanda's psyche. I would agree with Scott there. And I think that is kind of what we started from when it came to the interpretation of those commercials. So kind of went down a side track there that brought us back home. It is interesting, this language of Nexus, though, that is emphasized. Mm-hmm. There is a Marvel concept called the Nexus of Reality, which is literally a thing that exists in a place in the Everglades. Okay. It was absorbed into the body of a character called the Man-Thing at one point. That's not important. What's important?
Tim going old school on the Man-Thing.
Yeah, that part's not important at all. It is very fun to talk about how the Man-Thing absorbed the Nexus of Reality. But the Nexus of Reality as a concept is just basically a gateway to all worlds. So if you need access to something, you step through the Nexus of Reality, you can get anywhere. Sometimes you don't know exactly what you're going to get. It can be rather chaotic and uncontrollable, but that is its sort of purpose in the grand scheme of things. So if we are talking about the Nexus of Reality directly here, which we may not be, I mean, this could just be one of those subtle nods that these shows, these movies and shows like to do. Perhaps Westview is where the Nexus of Reality resides in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And if so, that might tie back to an earlier idea that I had about how everything Wanda is doing, manipulating the reality around her and within Westview, is sort of wearing down, sort of weakening the walls between dimensions, or perhaps it's like unlocking this nexus of reality, if in fact that is a thing, if that's a literal thing that exists within this town, within this world. Who would want to do that? Why would they want to do that? Perhaps remains to be seen. Maybe someone's trying to get out. I don't know. I threw that out as a possibility few episodes back too, so I'm sort of all over the place, but that Nexus language, just the wording that had to have been a deliberate choice Whether it amounts to anything or it's just an Easter egg remains to be seen. But yeah, I was definitely taken by that.
All right. Sean, what are your thoughts?
So I hate when either Tim and I are talking and we both know something about something and Tim's right about the Nexus. So Tim, good job. The only thing I will add about the Nexus is not only is it kind of like a time stream kind of thing, but you also have what they call Nexus beings, or which are beings that can control that reality, maybe control that multiverse, which, by the way, unless your doctor tells you you're clear to move on in your life. So could this be a Doctor Strange and a multiverse kind of jump on point with this Nexus?
Okay.
That's the only thing I would add. I think there's a tie into this and Doctor Strange, and we already know it's going to be a multiverse movie with Doctor Strange. And I think this kind of lays that out, which to me probably tells me we're going to see Doctor Strange by the end of this. I think we, at the end of when we were doing a Mandalorian pod, we were speculating who was going to show up at the end. And we had that Luke Skywalker moment.
Mm-hmm.
This commercial right here, as maybe minimal as it seems, leads me to believe we're going to see Doctor Strange before the end of this show. So I would just add that piece. Everything else Tim said about the Nexus 100% right. I actually forgot Man-Thing was part of that. So that's pretty funny.
I think Havok absorbed it at one point, oddly enough, in that atrocious series Mutant X, if you remember.
Yeah,
We've had a few hosts.
Yes, I remember Mutant X very well, actually.
What an atrocious, god-awful... We've had a few hosts for the Nexus of reality. Maybe Wanda's a host for it. And
that's kind of where I'm going with it. Maybe she's one of those Nexus beings. And I would venture to say maybe Doctor Strange is too at some point. I'm just saying, I feel like there's a Doctor Strange tie-in in this whole dialogue right here. So I could be wrong, but we'll see. As far as Agnes goes, yeah, like Scott said, you're starting to see that this is kind of where you're starting to suspect she's really not who she says she is. And that Billy kid's really freaking creepy. hey, Tim, here's where you get to do your Rosemary's Baby impression right here.
You didn't take care of the baby. I didn't see what the baby. You can't read anything in my head. Why would the baby get so old and have these powers and don't know anything in my head? What's wrong with the baby?
So Billy is Rosemary's baby. That's who. He's just a creepy ass kid. And to Scott's point, your quiet Agnes on the inside was really freaking creepy. So yeah, there's a whole lot of mess going on here with Agnes. Definitely setting something up.
Okay.
If this thing ends with Agnes and a whole bunch of people like Damon Hellstrom and Mephisto and Hell, the Man Thing, and Doctor Strange and the children all chanting "Hail Satan," we'll really be onto some.
I can't wait for that Rosemary's Baby finale.
Okay.
Oh, so sorry. The rabbit. Right, It's weird that we get a callback to the rabbit like right after that commercial also, and all the creepy stuff happening with Agnes. Senior Scratchy, I think we've mentioned in the past that Mr. Scratch was a Mephisto alias at one point. Although, I won't say this yet because we aren't there. There's a character called Nicholas Scratch. Who might be a more direct reference. So we haven't forgotten about that damn rabbit who is maybe gonna be something important when all is said and done here.
Okay. All right, so outside the anomaly, Rambo is dressed in a spacesuit, ready to drive the rover into Westview and vows to save Darcy. Goodner tells Wu that she's driving Sword's most heavily armored space rover. Rambo will sail right through it unharmed. Monica accelerates towards the energy field, but she doesn't sail right through it. It's more like smashing into a wall. She tries to push through the field's density, but the field's density matches hers, and it causes the front wheels to ride upwards. The field starts to absorb the rover. Goodner says the vehicle is disintegrating, but Wu corrects her, saying it's being rewritten. I can't even say that. Rewritten. I'm sorry, folks, and I'm having pronunciation.
Gonna rewritten the wova here and with the babies. They're gonna rewrite the wova.
It's rewriting the wova. We're gonna have Wari on this podcast tonight. Anyway, so he gets on the radio to tell Monica to get out of the rover before it absorbs her. The rover is pulled in further before being thrown out. The front half of the vehicle has been transformed into a standard 4x4. Monica looks at the field, looks at Wu, says she can get through it. As Wu urges her not to, she sprints towards the hex field and forces herself inside. As she fights her way into Westview. She hears flashbacks of her mother, Carol Danvers, and Nick Fury. When she emerges, her eyes are glowing blue. Her body has been changed somehow, and she can see the hex field glowing. She runs towards the town. So we cut to Darcy telling Vision the story of his death, how Wanda killed him to save half the universe before Thanos rewound time, killed him all over again, and undid the universe saving. They're stopped by yet another red light. It's kind of overkill out here in the sticks. Don't you think, she remarks. As the light goes green, they try to pull away. A team arrives to repair the lights, holding out further. Vision tells the unseen interviewer that he thinks Wanda is creating these impediments to stop me from returning home. I am not amused. So, all right, so we have, you know, Monica, you know, trying to get in back into the hex with a giant vehicle, unsuccessful, but then pushes through on her own, and her eyes are going blue. I'm sure Tim and Sean once again, and Scott, I forgot how much comic knowledge you have, can maybe, you know, educate us on what her character, this could be the, you know, the origin story, right, of a new character in the MCU. And then we have Darcy kind of recounting to Vision about that, you know, that big mass email she got about everything that happened. So, Tim, where are we at?
All right. Well, the rover does not work as designed. It already feels a little bit, I don't know, forced that they just seem to pull this thing out of their ass in the first place. Like, who's... I guess maybe it was designed by, if not Agent Goodner, then this unseen aerospace engineer who may or may not end up being someone. But yeah, that thing exists. I don't know. This is where I want to say something like all of the outside the hex material almost feels really cliched and forced. In the way that like a bad episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would. It's just all like very, and I know that for the most part, we've been very effusive about this show, like very positive. And I do think it's a very good show, but there are just moments where you're like, God, this is a better show than, this is supposed to be a better show than what we're seeing. And some of this stuff between the agents and I don't know. I get that you have to get from point A to point B ultimately, and the details don't matter that much, but it just felt a little bit silly and out of nowhere. But anyway, the rover experiment does not work, gets partially transformed and then regurgitated, but Monica thinks she can get back in for whatever reason. She thinks that she is like maybe simpatico with the hex. It worked for her once, seemed to accept her, and once again she manages to push her way through, but maintains her own identity and sense of self. But some kind of change takes place. I also thought that just the, if this is how she gets her powers, it's a little bit like just convoluted. Why is she becoming a superhero because she was exposed to another superhero's powers? Like, why isn't everybody who gets exposed to the hex getting powers? Maybe we're going to see a reason for that. I don't know. I don't understand how, I don't know what satisfactory reason for that could exist other than we wanted Monica to get superpowers and this was just the most convenient way to do it. So it just didn't feel like they put as much thought or effort into that as they could have. As far as her comics counterpart, I mean, comics Monica is a very, very, I mean, extremely powerful character. She, I believe her abilities are she can transform herself into any form of energy and back. So, I mean, you figure that opens up a lot of possibilities. And we haven't really seen her flex her might. You know, she just acquired these abilities, assuming that's what they are. But she sure gets that superhero landing in, doesn't she? We see the blue glowing eyes. I mean, obviously, these are all tip-offs that she's got abilities, and she's going to be figuring them out. And we'll probably see a lot more of that in the next two episodes. But here, it's just sort of foreshadowing, it feels like.
All right, Sean.
So again, Tim steals that thunder. I hated this whole thing. I love this show from the start, and this might be the first time where I'm really going to shit on it. So what was the point of this armored, whatever it's called? What was the point if all she was going to do was end up walking through it anyway? I did laugh when half the vehicle came out as a 4x4 truck. That was pretty damn funny. But is she just going to get out and walk through this thing, and they just did this whole thing for the space rover and this aerospace engineer? She just gets out and walks through it. And, oh, by the way, when she walks through it, all of a sudden she has powers. I think this is the laziest form of storytelling in how to get someone their powers that I've seen. So here's my question. Why does she get powers? So Darcy got pulled into this too, right? All these swords agents got pulled into this too. Mm-hmm. What's special about Monica that makes her have these powers? The only thing, and Tim, this could be a far, far stretch. What if she has, the only thing I could think of is, besides, if I'm going to go real tropey, is maybe she has the mutant gene and this kind of unearthed her mutant powers.
Yeah.
What do you think of that theory?
I think it makes a character who's not a mutant into a mutant, which...
Correct. But I can't understand why they would make this so... Like, her getting her powers this way just seems really ridiculous to me.
Well, Sean, they had mentioned a couple episodes ago that she had the reason why they wanted to use like the rovers because she already had so much radiation attached to her through going through the hex the first time and getting shot out that they didn't want to give her more radiation. So I think that's why she tried. And then she just said, fuck it when it failed and was like, I'm going to run through it.
Well, what about Darcy and every resident that's within that thing already?
Well, here's what I think. I think because she was exposed to Captain Marvel, she might already have some of like the, I guess Captain Marvel dust on her. And
I like it. Captain Marvel dust.
That's possible.
And then like that just like amplifies it that much more.
Okay. So at the end of the day, what I'm saying is I don't think her going through this is really the main reason why she got her powers. I'm hoping there's a backstory as to why. Like, why does her genetic makeup make her somebody that gets these powers? I think hopefully they'll explain that at some point, I would imagine.
But I will agree it is kind of lazy storytelling. I mean, this is someone who watches wrestling and like it doesn't make sense most of the time, and I have to connect the dots myself.
So this is the first time I thought this has really gotten lazy. And to Tim's point, he's right. It feels very lazy. Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. very towards the end of their run and probably in the middle of their run too, where the stories just all blended together and got really boring. So hopefully now that we're through that, she's back in, we can walk away from all that. Because I'm really starting not to become a whole fan of the whole sword thing at this point. I just feel like it's here to be here and just to get all the characters together. And anyway, but I did enjoy Darcy and Vision again. The traffic light thing was pretty funny. I like how this is such a serious thing going on, yet they're still adding humor into it. So I do like that. And again, Vision doing the interview was also very funny because he's kind of breaking the fourth wall and, hey, you know what, Vision, you're not supposed to be doing this like Tim talked earlier. So, yeah, I kind of liked all that. I just hated the whole Monica thing.
Was the and hold on, I'm sorry. Was the idea that the rover could actually make it through without being changed, or was the idea that even if it did get changed, it would still afford Monica enough protection that she wouldn't? Because if the rover was just supposed to make it through unscathed, then that was an absolute failure on every level.
Yeah, like, that's what I'm saying. The whole thing was
total
really
fuck up.
I think it was the latter of the two. Because like they had said like when she went through the first time, her clothes turned into Kevlar. So
I think maybe even if the rover itself was transformed, then it was shielded enough that she would still be protected and not change. But, you know, she managed to push her way through it anyway.
I feel like they should have not just wasted 10 or 15 minutes on the storyline and just have her go rogue and run through the damn thing to begin
with. I would kind of agree, yeah. more just kind of forced drama, forced conflict.
Correct.
Because we need that for some reason in this outside hex stuff, even though I think there's enough going on in the world within the hex that we don't need all this bullshit. Like, we don't need it to be an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. taking place outside of it. Just everybody on the same page, working towards a common goal, and when the need arises, have somebody go rogue. But all these little mini twists and machinations are not really adding much to the show.
And if you're going to go Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., at least give me Coulson. I mean, come on.
Sure, right?
Yeah, I checked out on that last season and a half, two seasons, I think. I think I checked out on that show.
Which, you didn't miss anything.
Yeah, I hear though rumors that they're going to bring Coulson and Quake back into the MCU. I don't know. Maybe
Quake would be okay in the grand scheme of things. She would make sense, especially in Secret Invasion, but that's a whole nother.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Sean, right don't there. Give me hope.
She'd be another one on the list.
Yeah.
I don't well, that I'll talk about that when we talk about the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Right. Scott, you're up.
I said a little bit when Sean talking. Sorry to interrupt there, Sean.
No, you're good. No problem.
But like, you know, with the Monica thing, I will say I'm such a sucker for like the hero entrance and her like hitting the ground and looking up. I will never not think
that was badass. I did like that.
I will never not think that's badass. The Darcy and Vision stuff, like we think it's Wanda, and I fully believe it's She Who Must Not Be Named that we'll be talking about at the end of the episode. That was making it so that Darcy and Vision couldn't get to Wanda and explain to her what was going on. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see more of that in the next two episodes. And with, you know, Vision playing 21 questions with Darcy, I think it's pretty much known what happened with Vision, because I was reading online. I didn't think, and it triggered the moment, but in Avengers Endgame, we see Captain America sitting down with like people in a support group talking about what happened when Thanos, you know, did the snap. So I think everyone knows that, like, how the Avengers try to save and ultimately failed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just joking about it.
No, but I'm just saying, like, I could see how people think that. It's like, how does this, like, scientist know, like, the whole movies when she obviously wasn't there?
Did we ever learn if Darcy was snapped or she wasn't snapped?
I don't think she was.
Okay. I don't think she was either, because she now seems to be this polymath who has multiple degrees. Like, didn't she start out as...
She's a grad student or something.
Yeah, she was the intern. Yeah.
And she wasn't even, like, a STEM major, right? Didn't she say she was, like, a philosophy major or something who was just assigned to work with Natalie Portman? I'm sorry, Jane Foster. And then by the second Thor movie, she was a grad student in her own right. I don't know in what field. And now she seems to be in a completely different field altogether. I'm not even saying it's unrealistic, because we've had a 5-year time jump. So there's enough time there for her to, you know, obtain multiple degrees, which is why I don't think she was snapped necessarily. I don't think she lost 5 years of her life.
It's probably easier to get classes when half the universe is gone.
Right,
so,
right. You know, a lot less competition.
Hybrid learning is what.
It's a lot less competition.
Yeah, and for anybody out there who's been in New Jersey, they got this spot on. This looks like central, you know, farm garden. This is Garden State, New Jersey, right here. Because I spend a lot of time. My family has a house in Jackson, which I think is actually not that far from where Westview is supposed to be. So I'm like watching this episode. I'm like, this looks so familiar to me, because I spent so much of my life in this area. So continue on though. Vision tries to get his head around who he is. He understands that his thoughts are based on Tony Stark's AI Jarvis, and that his body was created by Ultron. But what does that make him now? Darcy assumed Wanda had just like flicked the switch on in his head, but that doesn't explain why he can't leave the hex. What I do know is I've been watching WandaVision for the past week, she adds, and that love you two have is real. You belong together. Monica then arrives at Wanda's house and bursts in. Wanda asks how she got in here and tells her to get out of her house. Monica warns her about Hayward's plans for Vision, but Wanda uses her power to launch the Sword Agent into the air. All the neighbors, including Dottie, look on. The drones, the missiles, Pietro, all you do is lie, argues Wanda. Excuse me. As Monica tries to explain, Sword had nothing to do with Pietro. Wanda slams her into the sidewalk. Monica's powers activate, her new ones, and she's surrounded by blue energy. As she hits the ground, her eyes glow blue again. Monica tells Wanda that the only lies that she's told are the ones Wanda put in her mouth, and challenges Wanda to take her out. Wanda pauses. Monica tells her that's what makes her different to Hayward, that Hayward is prepared to burn Westview to the ground to get what he wants. Don't let him make you out to be the villain. Maybe I already am, answers Wanda. Agnes notices the disturbance through the front window. Monica tells Wanda that she's not afraid of her, as she's also lost the only person closest to her. The worst thing I can think of is this already happened to me, and I can't change it. I can't undo it. I can't control this pain anymore, and I don't think I want it back because it's my truth. Agnes interrupts, telling Rambo that she's outstayed her welcome, that Wanda's been through enough. She tells Wanda to run along. Monica tells her to take the field down again, but Wanda refuses. Don't make me hurt you. Wanda tells Monica, yes, and I really popped hard for the superhero. I turned into Deadpool. Like, superhero landing. She did a superhero landing, basically. So, Sean, so what do you think here? We get a little, you know, kind of put the button on the whole, you know, Darcy explaining the vision, what's going on. And now Monica comes in as Monica, not as, you know, I'm trying to remember now what character she was before.
Geraldine, I think.
Geraldine. No, and she confronts her and kind of holds her own.
So as much as I hated the last set of things we just talked about, I absolutely love this. I love Monica's balls just barging into the house. Really quick Dottie appearance here. So we've been saying, where the hell's Dottie been? And she's in it for what, like 5 seconds, if that, we see her, like a really snip. So I wonder if there's more to Dottie, considering who's playing her. But it was good to see her. But yeah, I love this. I love her confronting Wanda. I loved Wanda shooting back at her. I pot big time. Like, I'm just waiting for like some major like throwdown we're going to get between somebody and superpowers. And we really haven't gotten that yet. So I know we're building up to it. I can already tell, even though I'm going to shit on Monica and how she's getting her powers, I can already tell I'm going to like her as far as her attitude. And she just has balls. And, you know, at the end of the day, a good superhero has big balls. And I really, really appreciate that. She's not scared of Wanda whatsoever. Knowing how powerful Wanda is, Monica doesn't give any shits. And she'll just go right in there. And she believes in what she's doing is right. And she's going to try and talk some sense into Wanda, even if Wanda can't have sense talked into her. And then Agnes, again, clearly something going on with Agnes, you know, especially when she said Wanda's been through enough. And, you know, she tells Wanda to run along. And, yeah, there's a big payoff coming here at the end, and this whole scene kind of sets it up. But I loved every minute of this for as much as I hated the last set of scenes we talked about.
All right. Scott?
Yeah, business definitely picked up there. And it was like the first – I mean, we saw some superhero stuff. We saw Vision and Wanda, like, you know, rise up and, like, about to take each other on but talk out of it. We saw Wanda hit Pietro with one of her red lightning bolts. But this was like the first time I was like, we're going to see something throw down. And I loved how like everyone stopped and was watching what they were doing. And, you know, cause Monica's lost people too. And she said that, like, you know, she can't change losing her mother. And it's like trying to talk her out of like getting through like the stage of grief for losing Vision. But Wanda doesn't want to do it. And like, you know, I think this shows, because Wanda doesn't want to hurt her, this shows that Wanda's not truly a bad guy, because if she was a true villain, she just would have killed her right then and there, or tried to like, you know, do more. And we definitely see Agnes. We see more of Agnes pulling the strings as she runs out and like gets Wanda and is like, you've done enough here, leave, which, you know, I'll get to it shortly, but Agnes definitely isn't what we seem, even like what we see at the end of the episode, because now I don't want to spoil it, but yeah, that's all.
Tim.
I'll start with Darcy and Vision and their exchange. We get that info dump, which I think is just as much for the benefit of viewers who maybe have not watched all of these movies religiously like we have, but it serves a good plot purpose too, of bringing Vision up to speed on his, you know, rather convoluted history and death, or multiple deaths really at this point. Sean, I think, or maybe it may have been Scott, kind of alluded to the fact that Darcy maybe knows more than she ought to about the specifics. And yes, granted, 5 years have passed. I mean, this stuff is probably pretty well documented, but is there more to that? Is there a reason she seems to know all these details? And it's, again, just kind of speaks to the point I made earlier about how I can't tell if that's a deliberate just decision on the part of the show to have her just know this information, and, you know, that she's a very astute character, or if it's just the fact that, like, all the stuff outside of the Hex, the characters outside the Hex are a little bit underwritten and things just sort of happen because the plot needs them to, right? So, I don't know how she knows as much of this as she knows, but it probably doesn't really matter. Vision now has this information as well. And the confrontation between Wanda and Monica is pretty cool. Teases what is certainly going to be something more to come, a bigger confrontation. As much as I bitched about, much like Sean, how Monica gets her powers, I just really love that character in the comics, and I love the way that this Monica within the show has been depicted. So if it gets us a fully powered Photon / Spectrum, whatever they're going to be calling her, I'm like kind of fine with it just because she's a really cool character. So, I mean, I'll forgive it. I'll hand wave it. But could have been done better. Maybe there's an explanation forthcoming that makes me okay with how she comes into her powers. But for now, I'm just kind of like, you could have finessed that a little bit more. But if it gets us to a pretty neat new superhero at the end of the day, I'm not going to bitch about it, but so much.
Yeah. One thing I have the episode on also. Wanda has a little bit of fear in her eyes for a moment when Monica like does her superhero landing and comes up with the kind of glowy blue eyes. Monica for a second is like surprised. Like Wanda, I mean, is like, whoa.
Well, yeah, because Monica's standing up to her and has no fear, and it's probably taking her back a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So continuing on, the traffic light repairs continue in front of Darcy, but before they can pull away, a class of kids crosses the road. Vision tells the interviewer he didn't realize how much Wanda had endured. He suddenly realized that it was absurd that he's sitting there talking when he could be with his wife. He phases through the roof of the van and flies away. In Agnes's house, Wanda asks where the twins are. Agnes says that they're probably in the basement. She walks down the stairs and the boys are nowhere to be found. She finds herself in a huge, creepy cellar full of vines with magical texts and skulls. Agnes walks into the room holding her rabbit. Wanda, Wanda, you didn't think you were the only magical girl in town, did you? The name is Agatha Harkness. Lovely to finally meet you, dear. She used her magic, which is kind of a purple cue to it, to put something in Wanda's brain. The show cuts to the credits for an all-new TV show called Agatha All Along, which is an earworm, the theme song, which you should hear before the end of this episode as well. A woman in witchy clothes morphs into 1950s Agnes as the theme song reveals that she's been pulling every evil string throughout the series. The credits show her using her malevolent influence at Wanda and Vision's magic show, controlling Herb, watching Pietro arrive on a doorstep, and making Vision believe that she was just an ordinary Westview resident under Wanda's spell. Even turns out she's the interviewer who's been grilling Wanda throughout the episode. And I kill Sparky too. She laughs. So that's where we leave off. And I believe we're up to, I keep losing my place here. Sean again. Right?
Oh, well, I think it was Scott. I think I went first last time.
Oh. All right, Scott. Scott, go ahead.
All right. I got to say this. I've been saying it for the past couple episodes, and Tim and Sean, I need to apologize to you guys. I was wrong. I'm man enough to admit that. I was the one that saying Agnes was not evil, and she may not be, but, I mean, if you kill a dog, you're pretty evil in my eyes, and all the other shit she's been doing. But she's definitely the one, and it was nice reveal. You knew something creepy was going to go down when Wanda got in the house and she's like, where are the boys? She's like, oh, they're downstairs. And first off, any downstairs is creepy, especially in that house where it's poorly lit. You see like flies randomly in there in the house. It was just very creepy how they were doing it. And with Wanda walking around and you're like, does this downstairs just go forever? Like, I'm thinking, does the downstairs like lead to hell? And then we see Agnes pop up and she's like, it was me all along. You didn't think you're the only magical one, which means Wanda really isn't the one pulling the strings. And at the end of this episode, it appears it's Agnes as she helped everything happen, go on with the show. And it just pissed me off when I saw the closing credits to this, but it was so crazy how Agnes went from, like, you know, seemed to be caring and loving to, like, you see the evil come out in her. And that's just a great Catherine Hahn just killed it in this episode. She had been like a bit player through everything, and we knew she was up to something more, but just with everything, she killed it. And I know Sean and Tim probably will say more, but I just can't get over how good it was.
Yeah, and, you know, not for nothing, those boys are a little old to be watching Yo Gabba Gabba. I think maybe it leads all the way, though, to outside Westview. Maybe there's a whole catacomb thing going on. Tim, unpack this part for us.
Okay, so we finally get our reveal of the big bad. I would say it's a bit of an obvious reveal, but for as obvious as it is, it's really well done, because we get that really cool, catchy theme song, which that thing is just entirely too much of an earworm. they got us there. They made up for the lackluster opening theme to this episode with that one, which almost felt like a I don't know, like a Munsters, or was it the Munsters or Addams Family? I you know, the two get conflated in my mind, sort of.
It was the Addams Family, because the Munsters theme didn't have any lyrics.
Okay, so yeah, Agnes, Agatha, all along. Okay, we all kind of. I mean, that was shit before the show even started. The casting of Catherine Hahn as a character named Agnes had people thinking, oh, well, that's going to be Agatha Harkness. And it almost seemed too obvious, like, because everyone was in that same boat of we called it, that they would have to do something else. But once more, I must back up and remind myself that this isn't just for the obsessives like us, that there are people watching it who are not concerned with, like, they're just sitting down with their families with their little kids who are fans of the Marvel movies and want something cool for Marvel to watch every week. And these parents are not sitting there going, well, what 1984 comics do I need to remember in order to figure all of this out? Like, they just want to watch the show on its own merits and perceive a character like Agnes and go, something fishy is up with her. I wonder what this all amounts to. And then to get the big bad reveal, maybe a lot more shocking, maybe a lot more mind-blowing or validating to people who are of that mindset, as opposed to us who are going, well, no shit. Like, if anything, it's just surprising that she is presented here as such an out-and-out villain. Because that's not the comics depiction. Agatha was a pretty, pretty much like an ally in a lot of ways. First,
she was old, very old.
She was old as shit for one thing. Yeah. Hence the, you know, the Ruth Gordon of it all.
Great comparison.
Which honestly, I really do think was intentional. Like, going back to her earliest appearances, like when she was the caretaker for the Fantastic Four, and then later on, it's only, you know, much later that she you know, helps Wanda to better understand and control and harness her abilities, but for the most part has been like on the side of the angels. She has a son who's much more of like the evil sorcerer archetype, that being Nicholas Scratch. Miss Senior Scratchy the Rabbit, is there a connection there? Is that just her familiar? You know, who knows? This evil lair that she has going on, I got like real Hellraiser vibes from that, honestly. Granted, Hellraiser filtered through Disney, but it just felt very like ornate and ominous and dark, and yes, demonic. So that's fitting if this character is a witch. Is she really truly the one behind it all? Is she working on someone's behalf still? remains to be seen, but I don't know. At this point, I kind of think that what we see is what we're going to get for this show. If there is a higher power, so to speak, we're not going to be dealing with that individual in the course of WandaVision. I think we might get a tease. We might get a quick reveal as a, not even a cliffhanger, but like a mid-credits-esque scene, much like we saw with Thanos at the end of the first Avengers. And that will be, you know, who we track in subsequent films and series. I think at this point, Agatha is who and what we're going to be dealing with for these next, I mean, we've only got two episodes left. And I just enjoyed the way the reveal was done, and it shows how she is manipulated events just from her point of view, things that we have already perceived and just the way they've been presented to us with Wanda and Vision as our POV characters. Well, what now we see how Agatha was behind the scenes and what she did to cause some of these things to shake down the way that they did. So just nice little touch there. All in all, just well executed. Is it sort of a, I can't even call it a letdown. It's just sort of a, they went the most obvious way I think they could have, but that's not a condemnation, you know, of the show. It just, that's just managing your own expectations and realizing that you can't penalize a show for not doing, for not fulfilling the fan theory that you had in your own head. You have to evaluate it on its own terms.
All right. Sean, what do you think of the Agatha Harkness reveal?
So Tim said not really a letdown. I don't think it's a letdown. I think the way they did the reveal was cool, regardless of if we knew kind of that that's where it was going. I thought the way they did it was really, really good. You know, I love the song, like doing it the song and then going back and showing all the different scenes and how she manipulated them. And those scenes are what really helped add her to my train at this point, because the scene when she's sitting out with the magic show with her legs crossed and does that little thing with her hand, that was kind of cool. And then the way she looks back at the camera when she's doing the interview. So we can officially add her to Sean's train in the Pop Goes to the Couch universe. So she's officially on there. But I will also say I struggle with this one a little bit, because I feel like part of me thinks, like Tim said, Agatha was not a villain. And I'm trying to think, is there anyone else in the Marvel universe that they've revealed that used to be your hero that ended up being a villain in the movie universe? Can we recall anyone?
I mean, they went in a totally different direction with Mandarin, as we know.
Yeah, but
which I heard they're going to
they're
going to course correct.
Well, I can't think of anybody that.
I mean, the Skrulls. You know, the Skrulls.
Oh, that's true.
That
was a swerve on the Skrull. So maybe it's the same thing. Where part of me was initially thinking that this Agatha reveal was kind of like a swerve a bit, where there's this grand scheme of why Agatha did all this, maybe to save Wanda from a higher power that's behind the scenes, or maybe to expand and see how far her powers can go. But then she turned around and killed the fucking dog, which, you know,
maybe
she's
being controlled by a higher power.
Yeah,
maybe
she's like, so I'm not 100% in on if she's the main villain yet. And I go with Tim's theory that I feel like they're not going to reveal a big bad on this show. And if they do, it's going to be a lot like Thanos. I think what Tim said about that is spot on. So yeah, great reveal. Did we think it was coming? Yeah, probably. The earworm was great. I love the reveal. I firmly believe now that this little dungeon they're in, I think Scott brought it up, does it lead to hell? Yeah, it's kind of lead me down that path of, you know, it's going to be one of those Mephisto nightmare, one of those, you know, hell type characters that in the long run is going to be a part of this show. But yeah, I'm dying to see what happens with the next episode, because I think that'll truly reveal where Agatha stands, and we can kind of put this whole thing to rest.
All right, and so go ahead, Scott.
And also, there's a shot of a interesting looking book that looks strangely familiar,
and that's where the Doctor Strange thing could come in as well, actually.
Yes, and it was on the restricted section, and it looked like it was one of those that are missing from the restricted section in Doctor Strange. And we already know that Wanda is going to be in the Multiverse of Madness with the Doctor Strange movie. That's already been confirmed. So maybe, you know, Agatha, you know, because Doctor Strange is sorcery and, you know, magic as well. So maybe she nicked this. And
I firmly believe we're going to see Doctor Strange in this show.
I thought you were going down a Harry Potter path there with the restricted section and nicking a book.
Why do you got to ruin a good show by bringing up Harry Potter, Andy?
Well, I apologize, Sean. We've gone almost the whole show with me getting on your nerves, so I didn't want to, like, you know, be left out.
Yeah. Jesus. Couple possibilities with the book. There's the Book of the Vishanti, right? Is that the book that was in? Did they actually call it that in Doctor Strange? I mean, in the movie Doctor Strange. I mean, if they didn't, then that's. It seems to me that's what that was. Or to go in a different direction, maybe it's the Darkhold, aka the Book of Sin, which is another Marvel Universe artifact. The only issue there with that, and this ties back to an earlier comment. From my understanding, the Darkhold already appeared in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know how it was used. I was
it
not
did,
watching.
It did, actually. Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess it doesn't...
That's I think it was during the Ghost Rider arc, if I'm correct.
Could be. Yeah. I guess it doesn't preclude that from still being the Darkhold here. It's just that, for the most part, it seems to me that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does not exist as far as the Marvel Cinematic Universe is concerned. Like, as far as the movies are concerned, they don't give two shits about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does have to deal with the movies, but the movies have always been of the mindset of, we don't acknowledge that stupid TV show, and we don't expect people to have watched that TV show. Perhaps that attitude is changing. I don't know. It would just... I don't. It would be odd to bring in something that is, like, very explicitly a callback or a reference to something from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., unless they just ignore that and put their own spin on it. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe it's just its own thing. Like Scott said, the missing pages from the book from Doctor Strange that they have... perhaps rebound, repressed into something a little bit more sinister. But yeah, I mean, they linger on that book for far too long for it to not be something, right?
Yeah. All right. So, unbelievably, we haven't had one until now, but we get a mid-credits sting. 7 episodes into WandaVision. Monica looks around outside Agnes's house and opens the hatch to the basement. She sees the stairwell glowing with magical energy and is taken aback when Pietro appears behind her. Snooper's gonna snoop, he says, and then we cut to the final part of the credits. Tim, what do you make of this post-credit scene, or mid-credit scene, actually, sorry?
Hard to know what to make of it. On the one hand, it's almost a gotcha moment for Monica, or are they gonna swerve us and, in fact... reveal that this Pietro is an ally and is going to help Monica get to the bottom of this whole thing because he has been manipulated as much as anybody else. I don't know. Still hoping against hope that he's not that Fox X-Men Quicksilver.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is anymore.
I'm pretty confirmed he's not at this point because of his attitude, for one. So.
But he does seem to be a Quicksilver, given his abilities. Unless she just gave some random guy speed powers, which, whatever, would be consistent with giving Monica random energy pattern powers as she enters the hex again. I don't know. It just seems like he's probably a Quicksilver, hopefully not the X-Men Quicksilver, but I don't know that he's a bad guy necessarily. I don't think he's there. I don't think that's the gotcha that maybe it looks like. Otherwise, just why bother? Other than, I don't know, other than to remind us that he still exists.
And that he's alive.
Yeah, that he's not just a construct, I guess, right?
Yeah. All right, Sean, what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, I'm with Tim on this one. I have a hard time believing they're going to pull a double heel on us with Pietro and Agatha. So I think this one's a bit of a – Tim's right. This one I'm on the border with because I want you – I think they want you to think that's what it is that Pietro caught her and they're going to start throwing a smackdown on each other. But I think you could end up being an ally. And let's not also forget, Vision took off out of the funnel cake thing, and he's on his way here now too. So are we going to have these three stand tall to assist with Wanda? Are they going to have to fight Wanda and Agatha? I mean, there's a showdown brewing, right? We have two episodes to go. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And I'm with Tim. I think this is some version of Quicksilver. Initially, I thought this could be the Mephisto, but then I thought about it, and I think Evan Peters is too low-key to be playing Mephisto, in my opinion. But he does, like I said, look like a real asshole. So if he is the villain, it wouldn't surprise me because I think he looks like an asshole. But I'm with Tim. I don't think he is. I think he's going to end up being an ally, and he is some form of Quicksilver, but I don't think he's one from the X-Men.
All right. Scott, what do you think of the scene?
I was shocked that Quicksilver is still alive. I thought, you know, he was dead. Like I said, this whole week has just been me admitting that I'm wrong. And I thought that this was the Pietro from X-Men. I don't think that anymore. I think Marvel decided to fuck with us, basically, and cast him, and he's going to be a new character. I don't even think he's from the multiverse with that version of Quicksilver. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens next week. And I think, you know, we have two episodes left. Hopefully they're like 40 minutes to an hour. So we have two hours to see what happens with this, because I think they're going to be action-packed.
I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at you, Scott. I'm sorry. The thought just popped into my head, which only Sean's going to get this. I'm sorry. Maybe he's Robert Frank.
Oh, God.
He's the wizard. That'd be awful. That's what it is. He's the wizard. All of a sudden, we're going to cut back in our next episode. We're going to cut back to Sword, who are like, we got the broadcast back online, and they're going to finally figure out, oh, we've identified the brother. It's actually Westview resident Robert.
Jesus Christ,
the wizard.
And he's like, who? What are we talking about?
I have no idea.
He's just a different character with super speed powers, Andy.
Which he got from Mongoose Blood.
I am their father, but he wasn't really their father.
Yeah. He was an old man. He's a golden age, which means old superhero. Who Wanda and Quicksilver thought was their father for a period of time. And that was later revealed not to be the case.
To hear more about Robert Frank, please go back and listen to Shrink Wrapped over on the North South Pod, where we cover that very in depth.
Yes, North South Connection.
I was going to say, we're turning this to Andy Learns Comics. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Well, Andy, there is a podcast for your reference on this one, just FYI.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
Or maybe he could be that guy, Speed Demon, right? The other super speed character. Yeah, I mean, Scott brings up a good point. Maybe he's not from the multiverse. He's just another character from the MCU proper who has super speed powers, who got recast as Quicksilver. I don't know. I kind of like that.
I think Bova's behind all of it.
Oh, dear God.
That fucking cow.
Bovine cow.
So, like we guys have all said, two episodes to go. What are we expecting? I messaged you guys that, you know, I've heard that there's been some leaked photos or footage, whatever, or set photos of the Salem witch trial. So I think the bulk of the penultimate, the eighth episode, is going to be getting us a lot of Agatha backstory and maybe lead us into the showdowns or whatever's going to happen in the season finale, or most likely series finale, because I don't think they're going to do another WandaVision season. It's really a one and done type of concept. So, Sean, what do you think?
I think what you said makes total sense. I think the next episode's a bridge. that's going to take us back to what led up to some of this and to Agatha's history. And then the big showdown we're going to see in the final episode. So everything they set up in this episode, you're probably not going to see the payoff until the final episode, because they're going to have a bridge gap in the middle. I'm 100% aligned with you, Andy.
Yeah, it's like kind of like how, like, in Ocean's 11, or like I mentioned, the credits of Wild Things showed you. They showed you briefly what Agatha was doing. Maybe we'll get a little more detail into it. Maybe we'll find out who Dottie is finally.
Yeah, how she got involved, what's her story. I think it's a perfect way to set up the finale.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Scott?
I think we're going to go 50-50. I think we're going to be Agnes is going to be telling Wanda her story. And while we see that, we'll see maybe Pietro and Vision meeting up, whatever happened with Pietro and Monica as well. And I think he'll just be back and forth with that. But it then sets up the series finale.
Yeah. Agatha seems like the type of, if she is a villain, will be the kind of villain to monologue quite a bit. And Catherine Hahn will really be incredible at it. But Tim, what do you think we see in the next episode?
Yeah, that seems about right. They sort of need to, after ramping things down, they're gonna pull it back a little bit, because we've only got two episodes left, and I mean, you can't have like two episodes worth of climax, right? So we need to just sort of take a step back, get Agatha's origin, hopefully, and what brought her to this point, what set this world of Westview into motion under the hex. And then that finale is going to be all out action. So didn't we hear that the last three episodes were supposed to be an hour in length, but this one was not?
Correct.
Yeah, that's so, what it was, you know, it was a lot of places. Even Feige said that. And
what happened?
maybe we'll get an hour 20 episode for, you know, the ninth one.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah, there's a joke going around the internet about if the directors of WandaVision directed Endgame, it would have been like, you hear Cap would have heard Falcon coming in, but before we hear "on your left," you know, we cut to the credits.
Oh god.
That's how people feel about, you know, the credit situation and the length of these episodes.
I mean, I will say I do think it has been well paced. It doesn't feel like a movie that's been artificially stretched into nine episodes. Like, these do feel like episodes of a television show. Like, I mean, very much the way that they're structured, it's sort of like made it criticism proof almost. Just in that, like, they're doing these sitcom pastiches, and it's it's one per episode. It would feel very strange to package this all together as a movie. You'd be like, well, this is extremely bitty, this movie, where we're doing like here's this sitcom, here's this sitcom, now we're in this decade, now we're in that. Like, it would not feel right as a movie at all. So, and it wouldn't even feel exactly right trying to binge watch it, I don't think. Although it is very frustrating trying to wait week to week. But
I don't know, I kind of enjoy the game.
I was going to say, this is what television used to be,
it's
right?
It's been going pretty quick, though. Like,
it's what it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, who knew? Like, we've been so spoiled for being able to just marathon these shows, these seasons all at once. And it's like, we forget that it used to be torture waiting a week between episodes of our favorite TV shows. And it sort of, like, brought that back and said, this kind of still works. It's a bit of an FU to Netflix and just their whole model. But I don't mind it.
Yeah, the Netflix dump is fine for some shows, but for like stuff like this, I mean, The Boys, we've talked about that, how I did binge it, and I was exhausted when I got caught up, about to like six or seven episodes into the second season. Yeah, Falcon Winter Soldier is going to be, you know, yeah, again, it's a lot to ingest, but something like, you know, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, like a comedy. You can dump that. Cobra Kai. You can even dump Cobra Kai. I can be okay with that. But for like these kind of shows
here,
where there is so much to like unpack and speculate and everything like that. I mean, come on, it has to give all the internet geeks and nerds, like, you know, stuff to do for 7 days. I mean, come on.
Look at all the content it's generated. Like our show, all the YouTube stuff, bringing back that water cooler conversation. Yeah. Even though nobody's in offices around water coolers anymore.
Yeah, it's must-see TV, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to be part of the conversation. So, that's going to bring the end, though, to tonight's conversation. Today's, this morning's, this afternoon's, who knows when you're listening to this. But we will be back. We have two more episodes. Then these guys will have a much-deserved week off before we get to the next series. But, yeah, so we're all looking forward to this. This has been quite the ride. I've enjoyed every moment of it. So we'll see what happens in Episode 8. For Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Cafel, I am Andy Atherton. Thank you for joining us on Pop Goes to the Couch, WandaVision, Breaking the Fourth Wall, Episode 7. We'll check you out on Episode 8. Take care. Thank you.